Good morning. How
Good morning, Paul. Good morning,
are you?
everyone. Good afternoon. Good evening. Hello. How are you,
Yes.
Paul?
I'm good. I'm good. So far, it's very cloudy and gloomy here in Houston. It's raining again, okay. So thankfully, it's not as
Let
bad
me
as
see.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, last week, the weather is so weird, and but now we're good here in the East Coast because it's nice and sunny outside. Well, we'll see. I haven't checked the weather for the whole weekend.
There was a heat wave, ain't it?
Yeah, last week it was so
Yeah,
hot. A lot of people actually have getting into or getting back into like COVID symptoms. So
true,
I don't
true.
know if it's happening in around the US, in West Coast, but here in Northeast Coast, there's a lot of cases of COVID again. So please take care of yourself and stay warm. Stay cool. And it's just like, oh, hopefully it's not going to be distractful this time. But
True.
so we
No,
people can
for
enjoy the vacation.
correct. Well, here too in my neck of the woods, we're having a lot of cases of COVID. Just in my clinic, I've seen tons of COVID in the past 2 weeks. There's surely an uptick. Thankfully, I'm still negative. I had tested myself in the last 2 days, okay, because I'm a little congested too. But the good thing with COVID now, okay, compared to like 4 years ago, it's mild. It does still cause you some viral, illness symptoms like body aches and chills, cough, congestion, but low risk for pneumonia now because a lot of people have been vaccinated in the past or have had it in the past, so we have mounted a good immunity to it. But how are you doing? Because last week you were also sick.
Yes, I was not fully like with all those bad, but it's just like having a headache, so bad headache.
Right.
And this is a good thing that we're gonna discuss issues, right, at labor, because now you come here in the United States as a foreign nurse, and there's like COVID still running around, and you call out, and then your boss is saying, well, you can't call out, you're under contract, right? So there are things that we cannot prevent, and there's things we can prevent. How do we deal with it? We don't want to be feeling treated unfair because I called out because I was really sick. Now I'm coming to work. Now they feel like I feel like I'm being retaliated on for just calling
Correct.
out, for using my benefits, right? So I have 5 days of benefits as a sick leave. Why are my managers making a fuss about it when I only use three of them or four, right? So
Correct,
there's a
correct.
lot of things that we need to discuss this. And today, welcome. This is not your fun Sunday
Right, right,
topic,
right.
but it's very important for our international nurses to know. It's not, it's like, you don't go to nursing knowing all just the good anatomy, physiology of a healthy
Right.
person, right? So you went to nursing, you went to healthcare. You know the anatomy, physiology of that person, a normal person and healthy person. But what are you gonna do if it doesn't go to what it's supposed to do, right? So that's why we're here. That's why our industry is here. We don't avoid those topics that are uncomfortable because
We talk about them.
we talk about them, we approach it professionally, and we have to deal it professionally too, right?
Right,
And
right.
that's why we're called professional nurses.
Right. And
Right.
okay, again, our DNP Unlocked podcast is now available in Apple and Spotify. So for those who have missed our previous episodes, these are all available in our Facebook pages, also in our YouTube. And you can also, guys, download our podcast, listen to our previous episodes in Apple, Spotify. You can also see it in Amazon Music and YouTube. But major platforms for podcasts, you can find DNP Unlocked. This is a very good resource, okay, for every nurse that's immigrating to the US or are already here and starting their career. And not only that, even nurses that have been here for years. We've shared lots of great information. And there is no other podcast that's doing this. So, okay, this was my vision when I was new here in the States. I wish there was something that I could go to, and listen to or watch to guide me with the nitty-gritty in the US, because it's such a complex world. It's a totally different world coming from the Philippines or coming from where you are. But thankfully, with DNP Unlocked, and I'm blessed to have my two co-hosts, Kay and Anna. And we miss Anna today.
Yes, she's been working her butt off for long, for long hours.
She's a OR charge nurse, Kay, and she works in a trauma facility. So I heard she got a lot of traumas last night. I miss it, but I don't miss it, if you know what I mean.
Right, so is, it is a thing, right? The most people, the people who's really working a lot, you don't see them more in the picture. When you guys have hospital events and they have, they're throwing like barbecue outside or throwing like festival exactly. outside, you don't see those people working. And I always say the first thing that we should really like save food when there's like festival or festivities at work, saves food for those people at the back working because you'll never see them, but they're the one who's working hard. So that's Anna for now.
She's working. I worked in large trauma facilities, medical facilities, academic centers. We're ER, you know, we stabilize patient. Probably the most a patient would stay with us is 1 hour. As soon as the surgeon is there, that patient goes to OR. Now the real battle is in the OR because that patient stays there for hours, you know what I mean? And it can be 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Trauma doesn't know any hour. But so I applaud Anna for that. And, you know, hospital work is always hard, physically, mentally, right? Socially and all that thing. So, Anna, we miss you. But, Kay, today, this is our episode number 40. Wow, number 40.
How long
is surprising. But thank you, Kay, for sticking with me and our audiences. And today we're talking about one of our favorite things to talk about behind the scenes, reporting labor issues. And Kay, you're the one who actually advocated to create this show. Tell me, in your experience with all the nurses that are talking to you, talking to us, with the nurses consulting with you, why do we need to talk about reporting labor issues? I mean, for some people, it might be like, It's a common sense kind of thing, you know, but why do we need a platform to talk about reporting labor issues, especially for us nurses, based on your experience?
Reporting is very important to know because, you know, most of our nurses have grievances that are valid. You know, we all know that. That's why nobody wants to stay in healthcare because there's so many disputes and issues, right? So, but the thing is, are these disputes or grievances should hinder what we really love doing, you know, taking care of our patient? The answer is not really. There are battles, I always say, there are battles that are yours and there are battles that are not yours. So there are a lot of things that's burning out. Number one reason why nurses leave the field is burnout. And that's not only physical, but it's more on mental and emotional. Why would you leave a profession? Why would you leave a job or like your passion just because there are things that are not being resolved? And I always believe that disputes happen because of miscommunication or non-communication. And there's a funny joke about this, Paul, right? They said, what if all the women will be the leaders of all the countries in the world? And I said, there'll be no war because we just have a bunch of people not talking with each other, right? So we'd just be like, you know, silence, right? Just as a joke. Yeah. Because majority of the time we keep it and then we don't express ourselves. And majority of these problems or disputes are just not being addressed properly because we don't want to talk about it and say, hey, you know what? I've been telling them all the time and nothing's working. I've been telling them, well, there's a proper way to report things. And if you just verbal and you don't back it up with proper professional way of dealing with things, then it's just a mere like, you know, little like issues here and there that you keep on verbalizing, but you're not doing the proper way. It's not going to be resolved. And we all know that we're entering professional organization. We all know we're entering an organization that is set up in a way that there is a policy and procedure in place. So when a lot of international nurses come to the United States, they're not aware of that. Right, so they, you know, they will have concerns and grievances that they will just express verbally to their supervisor. And nothing's going to happen because nothing's written. Nothing's done the proper way according to the policy and procedure. And there are valid you know, valid complaints that needs to be raised up in a proper way, but it's not being fixed. So again, I always say that if you want to change things, you're going to have to start from yourself, right? You cannot expect people to change and you yourself cannot change. So in Lefora, we want to make sure that our nurses are equipped with knowledge to make a change. Because small people like us, Paul, you and me, you know, but if we collaborate all our efforts together to do the right thing, and we can make a change, right? So I always we have to equip our people with tools of education.
That is correct. I like that you highlighted change. And it's very important to know these things, because you're right earlier when you said a lot of nurses coming over here don't know their rights. I didn't know my rights when I came over here, okay? But over time, you know, I keep searching. Luckily, I did not have to report anyone for labor violation. But this is something that you want to know, but you really don't want to have to use to. You know what I mean? It's kind of like...
Yes.
But it still is important for you to know, because these things, while they probably don't occur on a daily, it may occur. The only question is, when is it going to occur to you or to your coworker that you need to file a report? And then you're going to start your search at that time. It's always best to know how to report these things and that. And that is, for me, why it is important that we have Facebook communities, because even with Lefora that we have, we're both admins to it, and our co-admins are probably watching as well. Thank you for your service, guys. But we're also members, Kay. We've met actually in another group, Travel Nursing Group, right? I follow these nursing groups because it opens up my perspective to the American nursing system. Like, what do they do if there's a report? I'm a silent reader. I don't participate all the time. But it gives me an idea of what other nurses do. But I also like that you mentioned about change. And that's what we're trying to do. Okay, I've always believed in the principle that if you want to change the world, you start with your community. If you want to change your community, we start with your family. And if you want to change your family, you start with yourself. So small ripples become big waves. You cannot change the world overnight. But if you start changing your perspective and you start implementing change to yourself, and maybe you can influence people the same way, and then these people influence the same way, then positive change can come about. It just takes time. But it's better to do this than not. That's what we're doing in DNP Unlock. We're talking about things that we want to change in the system, whether they're listening or not. We're going to make them listen. We're going to keep creating new episodes. We're going to, you know, talk about it continuously and say, hey, we're still talking about it. You know, we are grassroots leaders. We are not leaders at the top of the food chain of nursing and healthcare. Hey, but we are on the ground. We're feeling these nurses. We're hearing their stories. They're talking to us. We're seeing them. We're working with them. And we're going to let you guys know at the top what's going on, so we can all band together and help, you know, change the healthcare industry, particularly to our niche group, okay, which is the immigrant nurses. You know, back in my time, and probably your time too, we have nursing organizations, yes, but there are legitimate grievances from nurses working here to the States that people don't want to listen to, because they probably don't want to get involved, because it's involving suing a big company, and this company might have a monetary interest to an organization or certain groups, right? So they don't want to get involved. But are we just going to leave our nurses to be affected by these labor issues, by this immigrant fraud that we talked about in the past, right? And if we don't help this nurse, my question is always, how many more nurses after them will become a victim, right? So that's what we're trying to do. Every time somebody talks to me, because my niche is narrowed, I would say talk to Kay, because she has more resources, because that's our focus right now. We all have our levels of expertise. But I always tell them, please, please, please take this to the court, because people are scared to sue, especially for us Asians. We're scared to sue. We get very terrified, threatened if they start giving us like very stern warning or lawyers writing us. But one person that I talked to, I said, if you don't sue, just imagine how many nurses before you have not sued because they got scared and there was no change. It went to a point that it affected you as well and your family. So if we're not going to do this now, nothing's going to happen tomorrow, and all the nurses following you will be affected.
And that's the point, right? That's the point.
Yeah, because we're not affected. They have to sue themselves, right? Okay.
So for me, Paul, if we don't talk about these issues, this is what happened, and this has been happening for many years, right? We always say, you know, this is what we've done, okay? This is what we've been doing. So now, for me, my experience coming to the United States, when I first started, I didn't get the job that I was promised right away, okay? So there was change of plans. What happened to that? I suffer financially because I did not have any financial resources and enough to survive me for that 4 months that I did not work. Right. So, but anyway, there were changes, and good thing that I have family and relatives with me who helped me out. What happened to those people, which majority of international nurses would come to the United States? They don't have anybody. They don't have a backup plan to rely on. They don't have a backup shelter. Where are they going to sleep? Now, they didn't have financial resources. They didn't have the right people to ask. They don't know where to go. What happened to them? And this is where they solely rely on their recruiters, their agents, who give them information. And this is where a lot of labor issues, trafficking, exploitation happen. When a person relies only on one person's verbatim, right? And as for me, I did not know where to go. I did not know where to run. When I started a job in a nursing home in Bronx, New York, you know, I didn't get paid. I'm like, and they said, you know, that's fine because you quit. You're a quitter. I put my license at risk. I was doing CPR on my half day. Right? I was giving meds to 40 patients on my second day. I was by myself, charge nurse, already on my third day at work in the United States. So it's really wrong when you look at a picture and you're an American. But when you're a Filipino nurse coming here in the United States or international nurse coming to the United States, you would think these are normal because we observe this in our own countries. Whether we like to hear it or not, the reality is we observe so much exploitation outside the United States. And when we come here to the United States, we think like, this is American dream. This is the professional nursing. Right. I love this. This is it. And then when you got here, like, what happened? Right?
This is not what I imagined.
This is not. And then now you get disappointed. Now for people who's behind you coming into that institution too, you will pass that information, the wrong culture, the wrong professionalism that you're passing. Imagine that. They told me, you're not going to get paid because you're a quitter. Well, all right. Then what I did, I just cried in the subway.
Right. That's awful. And it's mentally. Nobody should have to go through that.
No, you're already away from your family. You're mentally disturbed already, emotionally disturbed, being alone in the country alone, and you got nowhere to turn to. And your resources are running out because it's expensive here.
It is expensive.
And nobody guided you. So, you know, those if we don't talk about this, if we don't correct this right now, look at what's happening to the acute care. And they said, Kay, we don't observe this. We don't observe this much of an issue. Yes, because majority of our leaders here are in acute care, right? Majority of the leaders in ANA and AONL are not in non-acute setting. Mm-hmm. Majority of them are in acute setting. Rather, that's the fact. Yeah. So do we observe this? Are we going to pay attention to this? We're not going to pay attention to this because we're not seeing it. But in reality, there's more than 4 million nurses in America. And you put that in perspective, Paul.
They say it's almost 5 million now. So, yep.
Yeah, almost 5 million. I'll give it a conservative 4 million. 6% of that does not work in a kid setting. And 6% of that, we're talking about 200,000 nurses, does not work in a kid setting. And how many of that are in the front line that are international nurses? 25% of that. Yep. So we're talking about tens of thousands in a year. Absolutely, yes. Easily. So imagine that you take 40,000 visas every year that comes in. And every year we have nurses coming in here. Well, that 40,000 EB3 is not for just nurses. But from the time being of 2020, there was no visa issued, right? Mm-hmm. Because of pandemic, it was shut down. 2021, 2022, there was a tsunami of visa because there was overflow of AB3 visas. So now you're talking about how many nurses got victimized coming in the United States on the year of 2022 to 23 and coming to 24 that are in the three-year contract that are getting this abuse. That's a three-year process that can make a change in the culture of nursing, which becomes exploitive. All right. So anyway, if we don't change it right now, there's no turning back. Our whole profession of nursing will crumble down the same way it's being treated in our countries, right?
Okay. More importantly, we are here as advocates for immigrant nurses. Because yes, there's 4 million nurses in the U.S., but there are also a good chunk of that. Not a lot, we're not a majority, but there is a good chunk, I don't know the numbers, that are immigrant nurses, that are not U.S.-born nurses, that have migrated here. Majority have probably assimilated already and has become U.S. citizen. But then we don't want to neglect our folks that are coming over here. We've gone through this. We've probably not experienced it firsthand. I did not experience any labor issue, but or immigrant fraud, right? I was one of the lucky ones. But we see our fellows going through it. So that's why we are here, Kay, because we are advocating for them. We already see American nurses that are grown here, educated here, are being frauded, right? In travel nursing world.
Oh my God, there's a lot. Yeah, he's just there.
I wish everywhere is California, but California is one out of 49, right? 200,000, 500,000 out of 5 million, right? Everywhere is not California. People don't get breaks, okay? I've worked in hospitals where I don't get breaks, so I have to buddy-buddy system with my coworker so she can cover me while I'm on break, but I can cover while I'm on break. The hospitals don't protect that ability to be on break safely, right? Especially with high acuity patients. So the point is, what about their immigrant nurses? They also experienced this fraud. But like you said, we're packing our bags, moving to a new country, trying to settle in, adapting to the culture, adapting to the language, adapting to so many different things. And on top of that, your employer is abusing you, put you in a nursing home where you're the only nurse, right? 1 week orientation, 1 month orientation for a new country. And you're going to run LVNs and CNAs and do all the med passes and all that. I don't think that is fair, right? I don't think that we're talking enough about immigrant nurses as well. We're kind of like the vulnerable minority in the world of nursing. And unfortunately, some of the other nurses are also bullying immigrants because some of them are a little radical thinking that we are stealing their jobs. But who are protecting these nurses? Who are talking about the protection of our immigrant folks, right? And that is where our advocacies are anchored into, right? That's where we have the DNP unlocked, because we want to talk about nursing issues that affect nursing in the US, but also predominantly hurt our immigrant nurses as well. And for those that are watching, listening to podcasts that are not yet here, we are not trying to scare you guys. We are presenting to you reality of what's actually coming over here. It makes you a smart nurse to know about these things beforehand. Yeah. So you can identify red flags ahead of time, right?
Yes. And as I always say, you know, it's majority of the time is communication problem. Okay. Mm-hmm. Majority of the disputes are just, you know, not non-disclosure, not no knowledge of the proper way. So if you can share a screen, Jaxwell, our moderator. So we're talking about, you know, labor issues. First and foremost, we're not labor lawyers, okay? We're nurses. We're the one who's affected by this. So if you have concerns that you think you need to address with a legal professional, you should talk to a legal professional, okay? So this is, my slides here are just on a roller. So Paul, the first thing we have to do is identify what are labor issues and what are common employee grievances. Because not all issues needs a lawyer. Not all issues needs a Department of Labor. There are common things that you have to address. And what are the differences? First, you need to identify what's the difference. If you're in this situation, what is it? Write it down. And then let's see if it's a labor issue or is it a valid labor concern that needs to be addressed legally, or is it an employee issue that needs to be addressed internally. Okay, so you have to identify there's two grievances: legal labor that is valid, and number two is your common employee grievances. And what's the difference of that? Okay, let's start with common employee. All right, so look at my slide. The common employee grievances, okay, this most likely interpersonal conflicts. It's like example, Paul got the easiest load. You know, I got 4 patients and he got 2 patients. Right. And how many patients should you have in the ER anyway? Right. So again, these are like common grievances. If you have like, oh, Paul is getting, today he got 2 patients. Mm-hmm. I got 0 patient. Did I complain? Did Paul complain? Right. If it's favoring you, you don't say a thing. You don't advocate for your colleague. But if you're getting hurt, then you advocate for that. So again, unfair treatment schedule. Paul, how many times have you heard? Why am I always in this bay? Why am I always in this slot?
A lot. Especially right? In the ER.
Right. And then this is the most common thing. Everybody complains of their schedule. And I always say, if you think that the schedule is fair every day, your expectations are wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a nurse myself. I became a charge nurse and I'm in leadership too. I've seen 3 different phases, so I cannot be biased to one. Mm-hmm. But correct. I'm going to ask you, will you take that job as a scheduler, Paul?
Not in nursing. Never, ever. Because it's so hard. It's so hard to please everybody. And nursing is so dynamic. Like with me in the ER, even if I put you to what we think is the easiest bay, like you said, or we call it pod, I cannot guarantee to you that you're going to get the easiest patients today, because that's just how, this is ER. You know, you got to be ready to what goes through those doors, is what I always say when I'm charged. Yeah. So I would never do scheduling, okay?
And never. I said, even me, I'm not going to take that job. Why? Because it doesn't matter how good of a nurse you are. Doesn't matter how good you're a leader. You will never perfect it. And the thing is, that schedule will never be fair every single day. Sometimes, some days it will be fair, favorable to you. And sometimes it's not going to be favorable to you. And that's the nature of nursing. That's the nature of our healthcare, acute care setting, or taking care of patients, because health is not something that you can expect to happen, right? It can change. So again, if your expectation is every day, we're going to be fair, that's a very wrong expectation. Now, the question now is, when you are always, let's say Paul is always getting 5 patients almost every day, and I get 15 patients every day, well, that is, there's a thing called consistency, all right? Mm-hmm. It's being consistent like that, and you've observed it consistently. I would give it 1 month, record it. And if you feel like the whole 3 months that you feel unfair, definitely there's discrimination there. You know, if Paul is from Texas and I'm from New York and I'm working in Texas, I feel discriminated because I'm from New York, right? Or let's say I'm a traveler to Texas and Paul always gets 5, I always get 15. And the whole 3 months is like that. Yeah. That is a very valid that you are, or that's a discrimination, correct. Right? Mm-hmm. Because now because I'm a contract worker. Mm-hmm. And I will do that. So again, if you have concerns and you've been observing that for 3, you know, for the whole week, observe it the second week and make sure you document it. Okay. How about Paul? A lot of people are saying, I'm not getting promoted. I'm not getting clinical ladder 1, clinical ladder 2, clinical ladder 3, or CN4.
Yeah.
You know, there are criteria. If you feel like you're not getting increase of pay, then the first thing you should ask is your supervisor, what can I do to increase my pay? Right, because, right? There are criteria there, right, Paul?
Yep. Well, the thing, honestly, Kay, to be honest with you, all right, I feel like the criteria here in the States are fair compared to when we were in the Philippines, because Philippines is, we call it padrino system, right? Like, it's not what you know, it's who you know, right? Like, okay, if you've been here 15 years and your besties are the chief nurse or something like that, you get better promotion. I feel like here in the States, for the most part, is fair. There are criteria. Now, that's what's good, right? Because they usually publish criteria. For example, you want to go clinical ladder up because you now have 5 years experience, or you did a master's degree, or you have a certification and you qualify for clinical ladder or clinical step two, step three, right? They do that in California or magnet hospitals for increased pay, for promotion. And then they didn't give it to you, ask your manager. If they don't still give it to you, even if you qualify, or even if you think there's an interview that you passed or something, then maybe that opens door for a discrimination issue. But the good thing here, Kay, is those criteria are published. They cannot not publish that because that opens up to labor issues and labor complaints, and they don't want that.
Correct. Especially when you're working in a big institution, they're very careful with labor because, again, there's a lot of lawyers who are looking in that eyes of labor. So, you know, the thing is, they don't want, you know, and and I would say a lot of our leaders are actually ethical. In my experience, a lot, well, the places I've been, you know, are ethical in majority of the times, you know. And these are, let's say, magnet hospitals. I'm not saying all of it, but I'm saying majority of my experience with those hospitals are in a good way. All right. So, again, it's just a matter of communication. And then there's also saying, Paul, like, I don't know if you've heard of it, right? Hey, she got a raise of this amount. I didn't get a raise of that amount, right? She got a raise of $15 an hour. I didn't get a raise. I only got like 2% raise. Or like $2 raise. So there's also different criteria. What kind of raise is happening? Is it a raise of salary depends on your experience? Is it a raise because somebody got, certifications, you know, advancement for education? There's differential pays, right? And there's also a thing called market adjustment. Have you heard of it, Paul?
Yes, yes. When there's inflation and all that. It happened to my work before.
Yeah.
We got upgraded twice because market adjustment and then the yearly. Yeah.
Correct. So just for give you an example, if you are a nurse who just started a job this year, your salary most likely adjusted to the market inflation. Okay. Which means that your salary is higher than those people who started years ago. So now the person who started 30 years ago, she will get the most increase. And why? Because her salary was based 20, 30 years ago. Correct. It will not have the same thing because it's called a market inflation adjustment raise. Okay, so both of you will not. So that's good, very good for those people who are been there for a long time. And for me, a market adjustment increase is actually giving value to those people who has loyalty in your institution, and which is good. So again, frontline nurses, if you feel like if you hear that market adjustment increase, you know, that is a good thing. Don't feel bad about it because that means that they're giving value to those people who's actually been there for a long time. And that's what we want to happen, right? We don't want like, hey, I'm a traveling nurse. I just graduated first year and I get paid more than a person who's working for me for 4 years. I mean, nothing wrong with that, but how would the other people feel that they've been there for a long time and have so much expertise, and I'm being percepted by somebody who's being paid lower than me, right? So again, there are so many variables that involve on somebody's pay, and we should not be judging it instantly that it's unfair. Okay, so that's one part, right, Paul? Anything you want to add here in the common employee grievances?
Well, this is plenty, okay? Because the problem with employee grievances is on the leadership side, because I also manage my staff, right? But also I'm looking at it like, because some of my friends are managers and directors. I don't want to be a burden to them, but I also don't want to be treated unfairly. You know what I mean? But there's really bad tomatoes sometimes too. But if we're being fair, healthcare is so dynamic. You know, even if you want to affect change as a manager, you're only constrained by your own resources, right? Yeah. If the corporate says this is your only budget, unfortunately, you don't have a budget for another staff. And the common employee grievance says, we're always short staff. I always remember, you know, my first director, and Shout out to Yara. If you're listening, Yara, thank you so much for everything. She's always believed in me. In my first year, she gave me five over five. Evaluation. And she said, people rarely do that, but you're a good team player and you're always open for suggestions. She always would tell us, guys, if you are going for lunch and someone's covering you, clock out for lunch. If you're not going out for lunch, that's totally fine, you stay. But if you guys are actually clocking out for lunch while somebody's covering you, because she offered a float nurse to cover lunches, right? If only like certain people, she said certain number of people, clock out for lunch, at least in a month, I can prove to the corporate that I now have a budget for one more nurse. That's one more nurse that we guys can bring in for a float nurse. Yeah. But you see, the burden is with the director and the nurses. Because the corporate is constraining us and we're all fighting like, I need more nurses. Yeah. I need a float nurse to help me. Where's my chargers? Yeah. Where's my director? So the common employee grievance is, we're fighting amongst each other because either the workload is too high because everybody's acute, or in the floor nursing, I always hear them, I got 3 admissions back to back. That's heavy, okay? Because that's a lot of paperwork to do or stuff like that. So I think it's all about, staffing shortages and subjective emotional component, because some people are a little emotional when they get over at work, and that makes it difficult because that's so hard to nip in the bud or to treat or to manage, right? So, but there are many subjective things as well. Yeah. Like, is this a legitimate grievance, or is this just because you're feeling we're ganging up on you when we're not? Kind of like that. But also, if this is a legitimate grievance, a complaint, a labor problem, are they doing something about it, or are they just dismissing it, or they just want you to leave so you don't become a problem and they hire
They want you to leave because you're stealing their overtime.
Yeah.
Right? Right. So there's a lot of issues like that too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Travel nurses particularly. We're going to give you the hardest one because you're getting more money than us.
Right? Yep. So, for me, what the international nurses have to do, right? Say, I'm an international nurse under 3 years contract, and I go into those places that have this, common issues that are not really illegal, but it's just like sometimes I feel unfair. And it doesn't happen on a daily basis, but it's just more common, and the culture is just so toxic. What should I do? Right? So, first, identify who your employer is. That's the first thing. Okay. If your employer is the facility itself, you can request to be transferred to a different department. You're not breaching your contract, but you have to back it up with evidences, documentation that are very objective. And this is where you come in that it's not like saying, hey, Paul was mean to me, right? No, you have to give example how Paul became mean to you. Right? Paul's being nasty to me. It's always like this, right? So you have to give examples, objective. Well, okay, more objective is Paul said to me, that I'm a shorty, right? He's bullying me. And I didn't like that. I don't feel comfortable. Paul and me are not friends, but if me and Paul are saying, hey, shorty Paul, right? You don't feel offended on that because we have a certain level of a friendship and relationship that some jokes are okay. Okay. So, but if every day your guys are joking and then all of a sudden I got offended by Paul, and everybody see you laughing before and right now I'm sad, right? So then that's where the question is, are you really offended or just today you just want to create some, you want to create trouble, right? With Paul. Again, if you don't feel comfortable in that unit and your employer is at facility, request to be a transfer. You don't need to breach your contract. Go request for a transfer, but be objective. Now, if your employer is a staffing company, all these common employee grievances of unfair should be addressed both to your management, to that manager in the facility, and your staffing company, okay? So you have to address both. You cannot just reach out to your manager in the department and not informing your HR in your staffing company, because your HR in the staffing company will not have a documentation of your previous report. For them, this is your first time to arrive there, All right. And this is their first time to address this. You cannot come to your staffing company saying this had happened 10 times already. But for the staffing company, well, this is the first time you kind of address this, right? Mm-hmm. All right, Paul, you came here as a staffing company, Paul, right? Mm-hmm. You arrived in the United States.
Direct hire.
Oh, you were direct hire. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the reason why, Kate.
That's the reason why when I needed the change of environment, because I was already in NP school. NP school was like taking so much of my time that I could focus on work and yeah. work was busy. I was able to switch to another ER that's within our healthcare system. Because my employer is the healthcare system, not my hospital, not my agency. So agency said, if the HR is okay with that, there's no technicality because the agency was basically just a middle person, right? I still consulted them just to be sure. And the HR said, yeah, that's totally fine. I mean, we move nurses around all the time. So that's what it, but that's one of the benefits with direct hire. The problem with that is I was abandoned prior to that by another direct hire, right? But it gets difficult with agency, Kay. You can't just move around because you have to, your employer is your agency.
Correct. And that's the risk of going into an agency. If you're having, you know, problem with that workplace, the agency cannot sell you. If you're a med surge, your agency cannot sell you as an ER. Your agency cannot sell you as an ICU, right? Because they have to sell you on the skill set that you have. If you're a med surge nurse, then the most likely next approach to that is transfer you to a different med surge, unless the facility will agree that, sure, she can transfer to the ER or he can transfer to the ER. But most likely what happens to this, if you're not accepted in that facility and let's say the ER and the med surge manager are saying, no, don't take her, don't take him, you know, giving a bad rep. Now your only option is to be moved to a different state or different location for the same specialty, med surge or ER, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just giving this example, not saying that other departments or other specialty won't be transferred, but I'm just saying because majority of the really a lot of disputes happen in med surge and ED, and you know why, right?
Oh. Yes.
And ICU too. That's why there's a lot of need in these specialties because of, you know, the
revolving door.
Yeah, the workplace itself is very toxic. Already, you know,
healthcare.
It's really taxing. And then you add the workplace, your interpersonal relationship is just
okay. I call it the workplace drama.
The workplace drama. Well, I don't know. For ours, it's Grey's Anatomy drama in the OR.
Of course, Grey's Anatomy. So, right. Yep.
Yeah, yep. So there's a question in our chat. Jorly Habonete, good afternoon. So Jorly says, is it a big issue to be in the morning shift only? It's an issue if you are hired as an evening nurse and it's written in your job offer, it's written in your contract, and then you're going to morning shift. Yeah, that's an issue. However, if you sign a contract or a job offer that says they're rotating shift, then you have no say there. You know, you took that job and you took that job offer that clearly stays there, rotating shift, or there's no indication of the shift, you know. So these are the things that I think need to be addressed during job interview. Okay, so again, most disputes happen because of no communication or miscommunication. And miscommunication doesn't only happen when you're at the job itself. Miscommunication or non-communication happens when during job interview, you didn't ask those things that you should be asking, or there are information that the manager should be disclosing to you, but did not disclose it for some reason. So again, it's the communication that happened before the job started and during when the job was there, all right? So again, always ask during job interview, what are my shifts, okay? And if the manager says it's rotating shifts, then you should gauge yourself if you're okay with that, or if you're not okay with that, then you ask. Next question is, how much time will I be given notice if my shift will change, okay? Because it's very rare here in the United States that today you're morning, tomorrow you're evening, and the next day you're night shift. You work in the Philippines, Paul, right?
Yeah,
you work in the Philippines. Yeah. How was your shift? Because our shift was like that. Today you're morning, the next day you're evening.
Yes, rotating. Rotating, probably do 2 days, and then off, and then 2 days mids, and then 2 days nights, and then back to morning. So it's rotating. So when I got here, I was like, you can be permanently days, you can be permanently nights. Or permanently mid shift, because in ER we have mids, right? Which I think a lot of people prefer. They don't like rotating shifts, right?
Yes. So if you don't like those kind of shifts, I recommend you addressing that during interview. And if the hiring manager is not negotiating anything about that shift, because they're hiring you for a specific reason. And that specific reason, whether we like it or not, because nobody wants that shift. If somebody wants that shift, it's easy to hire. Mm-hmm. Okay. So again, you always have to remember, why is there a vacancy? It's not the place is bad. Some people, they just leave because of family changes. But majority that happens when nurses leave is because somebody does not like that position. Okay. So good morning, Jerry. Thank you for joining us. Thanks, Jerry, for your insight. When you sign variable shift, correct. When your contract says...
We need to invite Jerry on the show. He's always here every Sunday. Jerry,
congratulations for our AORN representative.
Jerry is a well-decorated immigrant nurse, and we would love to have you in the show, Jerry.
Yes, we will talk. She's in our AORN board now. Congratulations, Jerry. We'd like to say hi to Warlay Du also. Good evening, watching from Philippines. Yay. all right. So again, identify what kind of concerns you have. If it's a common employee grievances, then there are things that you can work around. If this is happening a lot, you make sure that a lot means a lot is subjective, but when you say a lot in a way that I can see it 5 days a week, I am being discriminated, well, that becomes subjective, okay? As long as you have those numbers, and why do you need that? I'm going to tell you right now, your manager is very busy too. They're overwhelmed. They're not going to do a dig into your situation like, okay, let's count that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Only Kay will do that. Only Kay will spend time going with you through that, right? But otherwise, our majority of our frontline leaders are burnout. And I'm going to tell you, the most burnout between frontline leaders and frontline nurses, the higher rate is frontline leaders. Unfortunately, this is the reality. And they won't have time to sit down with you. So what you will have to do is work with your manager. And I know there's a lot of frontline leaders that are very good. It's just they're overwhelmed and overburdened. But if you present them with data, all they're going to do is submit that to their senior. And the senior will look at it and, okay, we'll talk. Okay? Because the more objective that you are and it's readily available data for them, then you will see better outcome. And they're going to say, it's not my job. Well, again, you should advocate for yourself at the end of the day if you want to make a change. Okay. Next, Paul. Again, common employee grievance solution. Always ask, where is the policy and procedure of our company? When you start your job, get your employee handbook. Yes. There's no such thing that, do we have employee handbook? Oh, I don't think we have policy and procedure in this hospital. Because the reality is, everyone has policy and procedure. That hospital is not running it, right? How's your clinic? Do you have policy and procedure, Paul?
We do. It's in my bag. It's this thick. I read that, Kay. I read. Yeah. I read those things because I always, you know, go back to, that's what the policy said. You cannot be naive to it, you know?
Yes.
But correct. Yes, it's this thick. It's printed in 8.5 by 11 legal letter size paper. But the other workplace that I have are actually handbook, or they also have PDF copies online.
Right? So these are important to know. And I have been receiving a lot of information from our nurses in home care setting, because they're alone by themselves, right? They're being sent out individually to the patient's houses. Oh, we don't have employee handbook. No, you do. Call your HR.
Yeah, that's not true.
Call your HR. You have employee handbook. Oh, we don't have HR. You know, because these are mom and pop businesses, right? You have. Trust me, you have, because that will not be given.
Let me call a lawyer.
Right? You will not, those employers will not be given credentials to operate by the government if they don't have policy and procedure. Again, there are policy and procedure. Most likely they're hiding that from you. All right.
Especially, but if you're writing, okay, if they're getting funds or payments, reimbursements from CMS, the Medicare, I cannot believe they would say they don't have policies.
Yes. So, well, time check, 10 o'clock. I just want to be keen eye on it. So again, if you have questions, if it's employee grievances or legit legal, you know, always ask, you know, your manager, your HR, and other, the chain of command. Know the chain of command. It should be on the employee handbook. Now we go. If you want to stay over with us, we're going to talk about labor issues now, right? hang around, okay? Labor issues now. What are the labor issues, Paul, that you have observed in ER?
Short staffing. There's no protection for workplace violence, like if patient or coworker becomes aggravated and aggressive. These are personal experience, not happened to me, but I've observed it, you know. What else? Forced mandated overtime, right? Mandated overtime, Kay. My supervisor told us, well, you're mandated with overtime because we don't have enough staff. Well, let me mandate that to the state of Texas labor law, and he was sure to take out my mandated overtime. No, mandated overtime, what else? Oh my God, pay discrepancies. Like they did not pay, like holiday pay that they promised in the handbook. Okay, in the handbook, it says in the handbook, this is a company paid, what's this, holiday time and a half, kind of like that. So they're like, oh no, we're only doing 5 holidays, but the handbook says 10, and this is listed as a holiday. So you know what I mean? So
yeah, so I'm gonna share here.
Examples. Yeah.
Yeah. So exactly, Paul. So I'm gonna share here. You can see my screen, right? You guys can see it.
Yes, we do. We do. Yes, Kay.
Okay. You can see here 1 in 4 nurses assaulted. This is I'm getting this from the ANA website. Mm-hmm. And you can see here, 1 in 4 nurses assaulted. Only 60% incidents are reported. Correct. And 13% of missed work days are due to workplace violence. So ANA is advocating for this. A lot of union or nonprofit organizations are organizing to protect the workplace. Okay. Now, where is this going to fall on if there's a labor issue, correct? That's our question. When should we be reporting it? Well, there's a workplace, you know, we've been assaulted, and a lot of our ER nurses are being assaulted, right, Paul? Okay, if you've been assaulted, what are the action plans of your hospital or your employer? All right, did they do something to protect you?
Can I say something?
Yes.
The hospital, after my coworker has been beat in triage, the hospitals, I'm not going to say which hospital, okay, but I'm a traveler, so I kept my mouth shut, but... Okay, the hospital's plan of action was to put all of us in CPI training, crisis prevention, intervention training, non-violent.
So it becomes your fault.
Thank you. Now it's the nurse's fault because we aggravated the patient. Oh my God, I could not believe it. The nurse almost lost her life in triage.
It's a funny, but not funny. That's what we say.
Not funny
what
at all.
What could have you prevented for this to happen?
They're
Paul,
like, it's your fault.
And all right, so that is a thing, right? So sure, I do my part, train me as a nurse, but what are you training as an employer? What are the preventive measures in here? So one case that I'm going to bring up in here, home health nurse visited this patient in Connecticut. I'm pretty sure you guys heard of it. The nurse was, you know, did not show up the next day to anyone. Apparently, she was murdered inside the patient's house. You know, I'm not scaring anybody in this workforce, in this setting, okay? But what are their prevention in there? I know of nursing in a home care company here in Maryland. Before they send their nurses there, they do multi-check. Does this patient have violations of assault before? You know, what are the history of this patient, correct? If this has been patient reported assaultive and abusive before, they will not send a nurse there. And this company is very good in protecting. Okay, what So before you accept a nursing home job, you know, what are the policy and procedure in protecting the nurses? Is there an item or a device that they can, you know, like pull, like make a big sound like that will automatically call for 911? You know, so before you enter a home care nursing, you have to remember that because you're alone. For the ER, are there codes that are sent out there? Can, you know, who will respond to a code? If the nurse feels threatened, what is the policy and procedure of the hospital or that workplace? In, you know, for if I feel threatened right now, should I be stepping away 4 feet away, right? And if this patient comes close to me, can I activate it? Is there a policy and procedure saying that, right? Because a lot of our nurses, they don't know what are that. Was there a workplace violence orientation before I started this job? Mm-hmm. Right. Those are the things that your employer can address this issue. If they didn't do anything about this, they didn't warn you on this. Hey, you know what? We're sending you to this patient that is COVID. You're just going to have, yeah, you know what? You're just going to have to reuse your N95 mask and put it in a brown bag and keep it because we don't have funds. Well, that's a lack of protective equipment. That's what happened during the pandemic. Okay. So those are actual valid labor issues that you've been addressing it, but your management is not doing anything about it. And they're just shoving it under the rug. And you have a lot of evidences, and this is common, that's happening to everyone. Then there's something that you need to raise concern, right? Discrimination and harassment. This is very common to our international workforce coming here to the United States.
Right. Very important for them to know discrimination, yes.
Yes, yeah, so because... especially harassment, because they know we're not going to fight. Have you ever had experience in this harassment part?
A coworker tried. I think put it up the chain of command. It wasn't only me, but there is. I think it's because I'm short and I'm Filipino at that time. I was one and a half year in workplace, and they hired this new charge nurse, been a nurse for 20 years. So he probably thought I was a new grad or something, because he's a little discriminatory for new grads, right? Yeah. And then I started, you know, I don't do it this way. You know, you can do whatever you want, because certain things that we're not agreeing. He didn't like that because he feels like I'm a charge nurse, you gotta follow me. So it ended up to a little form of harassment, and he was talking behind my back, but he didn't know that I was listening, or some of my friends are telling me. So I took it up the chain of command. I took it up to the charge. The charge nurse supported me, took it up to the director. The director supported me. So I took it up to HR. And the next thing I knew was he was being relocated to another workplace. And then he got fired eventually because he actually had physical aggression in his past when they actually looked further back. Or a coworker, it's a small city, a coworker figured out, hey, he was fired 10 years ago. That's why he never works in the city anymore. Something like that. But I stood up for myself. I said, if I'm not going to do it, he's going to do it to other nurses. And he's not doing it to me because I'm Filipino. It's just because he's very, he worked in military. So he wants things run a certain way. Let's put it that way. But nursing is different. You know, you can't say, this is how we run the show. You follow me when I say this. You can't do that to nurses.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Paul, because a lot of our foreign educated nurses are experiencing this one, discrimination. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, I didn't get away with it too. So I was told, hey, you know how to speak English, right? So I said, I know English. It's just the accent is different.
Exactly.
Right. So there's things like that that happen. But again, when you're feeling like that, write it down. Okay. Write it down. And then if you feel like this is consistent and chronic discrimination and harassment, at least you have a journal already. You always have to make sure that you are staying factual and objective. And then you raise this up to your manager and CC if your manager is not doing anything about it, this is something that you have to go with HR, okay? And HR is not doing about it, you know, and this has been happening consistently, you know, you have two options there, you know, file for EEOC for discrimination and harassment. there's our government, and we'll talk about that later in this next slide. So again, this is not uncommon. This has been happening with a lot of our international nurses. But I recommend you is writing a journal and make sure you stay factual and objective. You know, not like Paul is being mean to me. It's very rude the way he talks to me just because I'm Filipino. Right? So you cannot say like that. So you have to say, what did Paul say? What did he actually say that you felt like you're being discriminated? Well, he was saying that I am more light than him as a Filipino, right? So like, all right. So again, whatever it is, write it down and then go over with your HR if this is actually valid discrimination or not. Or if you feel like it's strongly, you know, if you don't agree with the HR management's decision or assessment, then consult your personal lawyer or go to Department of Labor and let them see what are your concerns, if those are valid.
Okay, let me add to that. To clarify what discrimination is sex or gender, religion, religious affiliations, or disability, health concerns. Those are forms of discrimination. So these are valid and actually easily provable because, I mean, if someone discriminated you for your race, for your gender, for your political or religious views, or even because if you have disability, that's a real form of discrimination. You are protected by the law.
Yes. For workplace, you're someone who does not observe or, you know, your religion restricts you from doing something at workplace. Like, for example, for me, I'm Catholic and I do not do elective abortion, you know. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. For me, this is my personal, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of people do it differently. But for me, the way to go around with it is create a conscience clause. Okay. Conscience clause is stating in there that unless if it's emergency, you know, you have to be specifying that. Conscience clause says that, like, unless it's emergency, life-saving or threatening, that I have to help this mother's life and child's life is on jeopardy, then yes, I will help. But if it's just something that I do not choose to carry this child, so personally, that's my, again, personal preferences. I have a subconscious clause. It says there, right? So you can express those. So please talk to your lawyers on how to do that, because you can put that in your contract. But it has to be very, you know, very reasonable, and it's really reflecting that specific religion. And your employer should be respecting that, right?
Yeah, and K, workplaces have exemptions as long as it's legal and ethical, and that's also protected by insurance. Discuss this with your manager. You just don't go assume that, I'll do this. But everything has to be black and white, which means everything has to be written out. That way, when the scenario arises, I have a religious exemption, or I have an ethical exemption, and this was discussed prior. This is my proof, so I cannot participate in this procedure.
Correct. Again, right? Like you said, Paul, you mentioned there, you highlighted it. It was discussed. Okay, it should have been discussed, and it's not like. And if there are things like that, I think it should be expressed also to the entire staff. Like for me, okay, if we have emergency, there's no more staff. You are the only one who's doing this. You know. Okay, we don't have staff anymore. What I'm gonna do is, okay, for this procedure, for this case, I'm gonna ask the other staff, can we switch patients just for that time being? Uh-huh. All right, we'll tell that to the manager. If they're okay with it, just for that patient, we'll switch around. After that procedure is done, I go back to that same room because I'm in the OR. I also do LA Lendi. Yeah.
Even in the ER, if I feel like one patient is discriminating my coworker for their accent, because not only Filipino, we have American Indians, American Latinos, right? Yeah, people are like bothered by accents or something. I can offer to switch. You know what? No nurse should be put in a situation where they're uncomfortable to work. Yeah, so that's my thing. If I'm the charge nurse, I'll say, you know what? I'll take over this patient. Go get some other patients. You know what I mean? Be also considerate with your coworkers if they have limitations, or if you're already seeing that they're being abused by your patients, the patient's family members, or their other coworkers. Split them up.
I always say life is too short for drama. If you can like resolve it, you know, choose your battles. Again, yes. Life is too short for drama. You know, simple things like that.
Your life, choose your battles. There's always bigger battles to fight. You know,
yeah, it's not worth it.
Fight these little battles. You know, one time, Kay, me and an IC nurse had an altercation because the IC nurse was exhausted. It was one of those busy seasons. Pre-pandemic where, you know, fall seasons and all that. So I was giving report. You know how it is. Every time we give report, the only chill people that don't need much report from the ER is OR, because even before we open our mouths, they're already there at the bedside picking up our patient. We're going to the OR right now. Okay. So something like that. But floors, ICUs, they kind of like, they don't like ER nurses. They see us as,
no, we don't like ER nurses. Everybody does not like ER nurses.
We're used to it. Don't worry about it. That's why we're number ready. But we had an altercation. He's a very good guy. I've met him outside work. It's a small city. Like I said, you go out to eat, you see your coworkers. It's a small hospital with 1,000 people. You know the nurses upstairs, right? But at this particular situation, I had to give report to him, but he was also busy trying to stabilize another patient. I think it was an overflow. So overflow are awake patients. You know, ICU nurses, they don't like patients that are walkie-talkie kind of thing. They want them intubated and sedated. I'm sorry, my ICU nurses. But so it was particularly stressful for him because his patient is now a surgical patient waiting to have surgery, awake, in pain. Ah, nurse! So I know the patient because all patients go through ER. To cut it short, I have to give him another patient several hours later, right? He said, I cannot take that report. I'm still busy with this patient. But in the ER, our rooms are important, right? If we get a room upstairs assigned, we have to take that patient up. We have 30 minutes rotation time or turnaround time because some other patient will need that room. And we always need one room empty because we're a trauma hospital, we're a stroke hospital, we're STEMI hospital, you know what I mean? So all the kind of certifications that this hospital is trying to have. To cut it short, we had an argument over phone. You know, some nurses can be catty, right? Or like,
yeah,
they like arguments. They like screaming at you. I was like, bro, don't scream at me. I'm the messenger, all right? Talk to your manager. I'll talk to my manager. We can discuss this. My manager said, no, you have 30 minutes turnaround time. You're on 15-minute mark. Well, you have to give bedside report. I went to my director's office, Yara. And Yara loves me because, I mean, I'm a very objective person. I'm not only bringing emotions. I feel like, you know, I'm not saying, this is what I feel like. I hate this. No, I'm objective. I said, Yara, I know that we have a turnaround time, but I'm also considering the other person on the other side. If he's really busy, maybe his manager can take report. But the manager is nowhere to be found because the manager is busy doing social media pictures for the hospitals and there's a hospital. Managers, please don't do that. You're also nurses. Please help your staff. Anyway, to cut it short, I told Yara, I'm not comfortable with this. It's like putting one nurse to another nurse to fight because there's a policy that we need to follow. It is not our burden, right, nurses on the floor, to improve your turnaround times. It is the leadership's burden to do that. You want us to improve our turnaround times, you give us staff. Don't let us fight with each other, right? Because that's what I think is what I don't like. It's like putting pressure to each nurse and you figure it out yourself. I don't like that part. Like, help us improve our efficiencies. You want us to improve our numbers. You want us to improve our turnaround times, because ER is all about numbers, right? Turnaround times. You're sitting too much on your patients. It's been 2 hours. The patient's been admitted. I understand that, but how can I do my job better if I'm by myself, if I don't have resources, if the nurse upstairs couldn't even process their new admission, right? You can't just give them 5 admissions back to back. Something like that. So I told them, and they talked to me about it. The director from the floor went down. It's like, you know, Paul, you have a very good perspective. I like that. But thank you for letting us know. Because that's like, I just don't like that nurses are having to pit on each other. So you can all meet your turnaround times. But help us do our jobs. If it's exhausted, maybe the manager can fill in and take that patient for a bit until that nurse is available. But the nurse was screaming at me over the phone, like, I'm the messenger. Relax. I'm going to help you if you help me, but don't fight me, you know? Like,
it is very common. Like, the thing is, recovery room nurses ICU, actually recovery room phase two. Any phase two recovery room patient, recovery nurses, they are the, you know, they're like the youngest of all because they have to take whatever it is.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that's a problem. Yeah.
So you know, so I want everybody to know that each specialty will have common issues that needs to be addressed. You know, they express similar concerns. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is that it's like for us, like ORs, we always get, you cannot say any, you cannot complain OR. Why? Because we're going to come out whether you like it or not, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you bring the patient up in here, what's holding the progress, right? I'm an OR nurse and I say, yeah, we're the bratty of the hospital. We're the brat.
And OR is also controlled by turnaround times too. So they're always right. We need this patient now because the surgeon's going to leave or something.
Correct, yeah. So for us, if we have a huge demand for turnover time, and this is national, not only your hospital. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to me, you're an OR nurse, it's not just your hospital. It's not just your manager. This is all hospitals across the United States who has a huge demand for, we call it FCOS, first case on time starts. And also, but again, going back in here, if you feel like you're being harassed all the time, they're, you know, because you're new in the United States and you're only here second month and you're adjusting to all this new technology that the US have, one thing to mitigate there is before you come to the United States, give a call to your, they call it professional development, okay? Or the educator of that unit. Communicate with the manager before you come to the United States. Hey, I'd like to know if you have this called skills checklist, okay? A skills checklist or competency-based orientation will have a full list of what you will have to learn. If there's equipment there that is mentioned, I recommend you before coming to the United States, look it up, review it, watch YouTube, call for a demo from a rep. They will be happy to talk to you about it.
It's also in their websites. Manufacturer's demo.
Correct. There are manufacturer demo and a lot of our rep are very willing to talk to you and sit down for free. You don't even have to pay them, right? Because it's a demo, free demo. So, you know, you just tell this rep, contact them in LinkedIn if you see them. Hey, I'm coming to the United States. I'm a new staff and I believe that they are using this device that you have. Is there materials that I can go on to study about this? Yeah. Be proactive because you not catching up in the next 9 months, next 3 months, the managers can give you leeway of another another month to orient. But if you're really not catching up, at the end of the day, you are at will contract. You can be removed, right? And if the managers can have like objective, that objective guy that you're not reaching up to the par of expectation, then you cannot say they're discriminating me, okay? What are you going to use to defend you? So again, discrimination, you cannot just pull that anytime. You have to be objective. If you don't have journal and you've been laid off or let go because you're not reaching to the par despite their things, then again, discrimination and harassment are very hard to prove. So I recommend you really having a journal and being objective. Now, going to the wage and hours violation, this is very straightforward now. You're not being paid on time, you're not, you know, you didn't get a pay in 48 hours. That's already a violation because you should be paid according to what is in your contract. If your contract says that you're going to be paid every Friday of the following week, then you should get that pay. Okay. Unless there is like, you know, malware, you know, hospital shutdown. But still, there should be a backup plan on how to be able to pay you. As for me, I didn't get paid when I was first here in the United States. For my, you know, 1 week, I didn't get paid. And they said, you're not entitled for it. First thing I go, I asked for it. They didn't give me. I asked for it. My family asked for it. They wouldn't give it either. And then we were just advised, since it's a small amount, check your small claims court. And I went to small claims court because I've attempted many times and I have evidence of that I've been addressing that and they didn't. So what happens? As soon as the facility got that subpoena, it's not a hospital. It's a rehab facility. As soon as they got that subpoena,
name drop,
they call me. It's okay. They've been on the news all the time. All right. So, they call me and said, your check is ready. Easy as that. I don't even have to fight. I don't even have to fuss. It's a hassle. Yes.
You should have charged them for your time to file the small claims.
I know, right? And all the emotional sting stuff that happened. Yeah,
and all the time that you spent. I'm going to charge you $100 per hour for all the hours that I have to follow up with you.
And this is the thing, right? My colleague, which has also been there for a long time, it says you should have not done that. Mm-hmm. Why? Because, you know, we could have talked about this. I could have given you money, you know. I said, that's not your responsibility to give me money. You know,
the employer's responsible. The employer.
And I said, now she's being harassed now at work because she's the one who referred me at work. Well, I said, if you're being harassed at work for referring someone who put a suit on them for them not paying.
Sue them too.
I'm like, I think you should be reassessing your relationship with that employer, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, again, because a lot of our culture, they just don't want to say, you know, don't do this. Don't make a big fuss about it. But come on, this is protected. Our wages in the United States are protected. Yes, I have asked many times nicely. I have asked many times. My family asked many times too. And they're not addressing it. I'm not going to waste my time.
I'm going to add to that, Kay, because you said the key word that a lot of Filipinos hold onto so dearly. Don't make a big fuss about it, right?
Yeah.
In Filipino, we say, hayaan mo na lang. Just let it go.
Just let it go.
That passive behavior is what leads to pervasive issues, to issues that keeps growing and growing and affecting more people. So that's my thing, you know. If I'm protected by I'm within my rights and protected by law for me to speak up about a very objective issue, objective meaning I have evidence to support it, then I will speak up. Like what I said, of course you're being emotional because you feel like you're being harassed or you're not being paid well.
Yeah.
But take emotions aside. Get your objective facts first, right?
Yes.
I'm not paid. Let me get these things, evidence, and then I'll file in the small claims court. Yeah. You can just tell the small claims court, I feel like I'm being harassed, because that's objective, right? Just like in nursing, you can tell your provider, I feel like the patient's not doing good, but you haven't checked your vitals before you reported, right?
Yes.
So something like that.
But yes, it's a very hot topic, right?
I don't like the hayaan mo na attitude or just let it go attitude.
Just let it go. Yeah. So this is the problem. And for Americans, majority of Americans, that hayaan mo na or just let it go culture is not their thing, you know.
It's
and
not existing at all.
Unfortunately, when you talk about DIE, right? Diversity, inclusion, and equality, when you're doing diversity, well, some cultures are being also not good cultures like that, you know. Just let it go, just let it pass, you know. Let them be, you know. Don't bother it, because, you know, they're your employer. They're going to revoke your visa if you do that, you know. This is where, you know, if this is a cancer, I would say this is stage one cancer.
Metastasis.
Now you're stage two cancer, and now you're complaining. The whole American nursing profession is complaining. We're in stage four or stage three. Why is the culture like this? Because somebody enabled this culture without them understanding that this is not acceptable here in the United States. And wages and hours are protected by the Department of Labor. For us, for me as a traveling nurse, I always say there's no perfect agency, but the great agency for me or a great employer will address my concerns in a very timely way. Okay. Whenever I call this company said, hey, you know what? I did not receive my paycheck the next day. We're going to wire it to you. Okay. Again, there's no perfect employer. There's no perfect agency. But
I'm going to give an example for another wage issue that I've heard. Yeah. And this is based on experience. One of the travel assignments that I did, they said, okay, don't clock in before 7 minutes before time, right? For example, time is seven. Don't clock in before 6:53, right? Why? Because if you clock in, that's overtime, that's another 15 minutes. Okay, so, okay, we're not clocking in. We're clocking in at 6:53 and later, right? If we get there ahead of time. But they also want you to stay at bedside and start getting report. You know what I told the charge or the manager? I am not taking report if I'm not clocked in. So either you let me clock in early and take report, or I'll clock in at the time you want me to clock in and take report. because I'm not working without pay. You're already putting me at in the spot, and I'm already working. Your insurance is not yet kicking in. I'm not yet protected by your hospital insurance because I'm not clocked in. So don't fall for those traps. They will try their best to save money, but not at your expense, nurses, right? Like, don't clock in. Then I'm not working if I'm not clocked in, right? If I'm clocked out, then I also am not working. If you tell me to get 1 hour lunch break and I clocked out, you can't be calling me on the phone. You can't be telling me, come back here at the bedside, your patient needs you. You can't be calling me, family is calling, you have to pick up this call. I'm clocked out. This is not paid.
And I want to let you know that some employers, especially those ones that are small companies, they know what they're doing. And you can see this is grab millions kept from employees. So there are employers that are good when they, sometimes they miss it. Nobody's perfect. Some technologies are not perfect. But then when you call their attention, they will fix it. But there are also employers who are intentionally doing that. Especially when they know that you're a new nurse in the United States and you have no knowledge about your wages and you don't know how your paycheck runs. That's why LaFora is here. That's why DNP is here to explain to you how your how this works. Okay. So imagine that $287 million in 2019, the amount of withheld by employers and the amount of paid back is less than that because it was not corrected. Again, there are things that it's done by accident. And there are things it's done intentionally. So if you see yourself in that situation, you call the attention of your employer, they're not giving your paycheck, they're not giving your promised bonuses on time when they promise. Again, those can be all problem with this. Wages an hour, not being paid your orientation. This is the most common, Paul. I have heard of staffing company not paying their newly arrived nurses in the United States, and they're giving orientation. Orientation, onboarding, for employer specific, like example, okay, this is what they do in the code, you call this number, that is called employer specific or facility specific orientation, that should be paid. Okay, but when they're saying, oh, come here, we're gonna do orientation for you, we're gonna get your badge, we're gonna go for employee health, we're gonna check, these are called pre-employment onboarding. You don't get paid for that, okay? But when this actual orientation, facility specific, that you are already orienting, you know, doing long hours of time on orientation, those are called paid under the FLSA. So again, we have a lot of our foreign nurses under this, and there's a lot of lawsuits already on that. Exploitation and trafficking, we're not going to go deep into that. But again, if you feel like you're being forced into jobs that you're not, you know that you don't agree to, and there is a threat involved already, or consequences, or they're telling you that there's going to be you know, that there's going to be penalty if you don't, financial penalty, or they want to inflict hurt on you, like threat, inflict damage on you financially, emotionally, physically, that there's a consequence if you don't take this job, and those jobs are not actually what you're supposed to do, then that's possibly in a situation called coercive practice or forced labor. Right. And this is something that you need to sit down, not with a labor lawyer, but you might want to be sitting down with a human rights or human trafficking lawyers, okay? Because labor will sometimes not pick it up, like, you know, just a small piece like that. But if they see the whole picture, there is an exploitation, breach of contract, exploitation, non-paid wages, then that is in a bigger picture called exploitation and trafficking. So please sit down with your lawyers on that. Let's go over the chat. We're going to run down this quick. Jerry mentioned it is somewhat your Bible that you can always use for your reference and guide. He's pertaining to the policy and procedure and employee handbook. Okay. Late breaks and lunch. That is very common. Now, Peter has a question. All right. This is a very important question that Peter has raised up. Peter Cornfreak asks, does breaching contract has an impact on immigration status? Okay. First and foremost, which part of your contract has been breached? Okay. That's the question. Mm-hmm. Number two, and what is your immigration status in the United States? Okay. So there are things that are specific. It's not the one this cannot be answered by a yes and no question. I mean, yes and no answer. But this question is very common question that is always being asked by a lot of foreign nurses. And the answer to that is depends on what is breach and depends on your immigration status. And depends if you have evidences to show that. Okay? So, breaching a contract, who breached it? If the portion of the contract is saying about visa and immigration and you defrauded it, yes, it will affect your immigration status. Again, if it's visa related, immigration related, that you defrauded the immigration system, yes, you are certainly going to be affected by that. Yes, you can be reported by your employer to USCIS, and the USCIS can take a look at your case and decide from there what to do. Okay, an example for that, Paul. A lot of our nurses coming here, they said, I will take this South Dakota job, but all my relatives are in California. What's your take on that? Right?
If you knowingly defrauded the immigration system, yes, they can get after you. If your actual intent, I'm not, don't quote me on this, lawyer up, right? And also, this is a warning to other immigrant nurses. If your actual intent is to get this job and buy out the contract eventually after 3 to 6 months, maybe it's not illegal. Maybe it's legal. I'm not saying that this is what I'm going to say. Your employer can get after you if you knowingly have an intent to do that. Because that's still fraud. You signed a contract.
Correct. So for me, my take on this is if you have plans or ready to quit your job, right? Knowing that as soon as you get here in the United States, you're going to quit that job and I'm going to move there and I'm going to buy out. You know, my family said I have money to pay that, right? So that is, I would consider it as defrauding the system because you promise the immigration system that you're going to be working for 3 years here. You're taking this job, but without any issue with that job, you just decided to quit. You know, the job was fine. There's a job. They treated you nice, but then you really have that plan and you have evidences, you know, I'm telling you, the government can get your phone and go through your emails if the justice system requires it, right? If you're going under investigation, yeah, they can go to your social media too. So if they see evidence,
I'm about to breach my contract.
Yeah, right. So exactly. So again, be careful with that because that's a very hot topic to discuss. But if, however, you came here in the United States, you're 3 months in here, and you observe all this labor issues that's not being addressed, then that is definitely not going to hurt your immigration status, you know, because you have provided sufficient evidences that there are worker or labor issues, workplace issues that are not being raised and addressed by my employer, you know, because at the end of the day, your contract says that your employer, you know, look at your contract. Everybody's contract will say this line there. Employer will follow federal, state labor issues and provide safe workplace to nurses.
Yes.
Okay. If that is not followed, then that can be a potential of employer breach of contract. If that is not followed, again, it should be on your contract. Read your contracts, okay? Gladys said, sayaan mo na lang, no for me, all right? So I'm going to go down, brush over, work to report. This is just a few lists. First things first, internal reporting. Go.
Compliance hotline.
Yes, right? So there are also like HR. Again, look at your policies and procedure, how to report issues of those that we mentioned, okay? If you think that this is not being handled appropriately at work, you do not agree with how it's being handled, maybe it's time for you to raise up concerns. And where are you going to raise up? Depends on the issue. If it's like OSHA, is your Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that is for your workplace. You know, if there's hazards at work that's not being addressed, you're not given the mask that you need, there's like toxic material that are being exposed to us. Mm-hmm. We're not given that radiation safety. You know, everybody should have that radiation badge if you're working in this radiation, high radiation department. Okay, so again, any safety workplace environment. Now, if you go to discrimination, harassment, retaliation, EEOC should cover that. Wage and hour division of the Department of Labor should cover also your wages and hours if you're missing that. Okay, National Labor Relations Board, Paul. What happened when these nurses have a bigger picture and they're under arbitration? Right?
Yeah.
You can, yes, you cannot sue your employer. You're under arbitration, right?
You can, but I'm not a lawyer. Arbitration.
Yes, you can opt out, but they're going to say, oh, we don't, you know, they're just going to not hire you, right? Of course, right. They're not going to hire you if you opt out. We know
no,
that.
No, I right? don't know. With papers that I signed, it says you can opt in and then get hired and then opt out.
Yeah, right? You should be. All contracts are negotiable, but international.
Be careful with arbitration.
Yeah, so again, a lot of the employers right now are writing you under arbitration. True. You can do arbitration, right? And there are also cases when arbitration is not really not enforced. You know, there are cases, but this is something that your lawyers should be discussing with you, okay? Mm-hmm. But however, can that arbitration stop you from reporting to National Labor Relations Board? The answer is no, because NLRB and Department of Labor, you know, EEOC, Wage and Hour Division, OSHA, they're not under arbitration contract with your employer. So again, if you bring this discussion to the NLRB and Department of Labor on those three that I mentioned there, these companies, this organization are not under arbitration. You can discuss that to them. State agencies, USCIS, DOJ, Department of State, if you're observing like visa fraud with your employer, you know, this is something that you want to discuss first with the lawyer. And then if it's something that needs to be brought up to the attention, then state agencies are there. Whistleblower, right? You know, recently, one of the biggest health company there was sued for visa fraud, right? Or under investigation by the Department of Justice. International, big, one of the biggest. And their revenue a year is like $400 million, right? 1 year.
Did they settle? Right. I think they settled.
They settled what? $9 million? Yeah, that's a small piece, right, of the puzzle. But again, better than nothing.
Out of $400 million.
Yeah, right. You know, for me, anything that is being corrected is a win-win situation for me to make it better.
That is true.
You know, and I always say not an action of one person, two person, three person within an organization may not be the really reflection of the entire organization, you know. But however, if there is no course of action being done on those people who's doing the wrong thing and the organization is tolerating it, then that is a reflection now of the organization, right? So again, there's private lawyers and nonprofit organizations that you can reach out. There's pro bono lawyers that who can take a look at your case. But the first things first, make sure you have a journal of what you're doing. It's a long discussion. Sorry, guys, that it took long. Well, I hope you guys learned something on this and how to address your work issues. Again,
very
for
important
me,
topic.
Communicate first. Start communicating with your supervisor and manager. For me, it's not always like go to HR. Yeah. Yeah, and if you don't think that your management, immediate manager is not being supportive or doing what's supposed to be done, then something you need to bring out to the HR. And then if, again, HR is not doing, involve your CNO, your chief nurse officer. If chief nurse officer is still not doing anything and they're tolerating, then that's organization system failure. Yeah. Then go out and talk to those organizations.
Keep escalating.
Mentioned.
Yep, keep escalating.
All right. Last words, Paul.
Protect yourself. It pays to be an informed employee, an informed nurse. Know your rights. Know your what protections are there for you. Do not be scared of speaking up, right? Collect evidences. Remember, you're not only protecting yourself. You're also protecting abuse of nurses that will be following you and will be treading the same path. So be on the lookout for these red flags. It's still happening, okay? It's a very complex industry. Our nurses are still having labor issues, you know? But if they know that you know your rights, it'll be very difficult for them to abuse you in any form.
Yep. So taking this opportunity to thank every nurse who have raised up their concerns. You guys are our modern heroes of our healthcare professional. Our international nurses, if we let this happen, then it will be happen to everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this, our colleagues or Americans are being impacted already. Mm-hmm. So again, we have to stop it from where it's starting. And the start of this exploitation, abuse, and all this culture that shouldn't be in healthcare at first and foremost, you know, we can correct this. And with the help of our international nursing workforce, we can all do this together, as well as with our American counterparts. Again, we're all in this together, right? And I'm not going to make a change here. Each of us will have to make a change. If we want this to be corrected, then each of one of us has the responsibility to do the right thing to make it to the better situation for all of us. All right. And sharing in the comments. And if you guys want to read what happened to those Filipino nurses under arbitration who cannot fight back, they reach out to a nonprofit organization and NLRB, National Labor Board. Actually, this is a win for our nurses. You know what the settlement was? The employer will have to remove the stay or pay provision. Imagine if you are those three nurses who brought this complaint to the NLRB. Mm-hmm. Because they're not under union. These nurses are not union. The mm-hmm. NLRB, there was a settlement that the employer will have to remove that stay and pay provision. And what happens? It's not only the three nurses who were free from that. It's all the other tens and hundreds of nurses who are under that company has to follow that. So again, the sacrifice of three person was saved by 100. Imagine if we sacrifice 50 people, you know, put an effort on it. Imagine tens of thousands who we're going to be saved from this. And we're going to make a change, right? So thank you, everyone who was in part of that journey. And there's more to come. I hope that people will start raising up their voice.
Very
important. Okay. They said I'm an activist, right? I'm an activist. Well, I'm an activist for ethical recruitment. Okay. So there's a difference of activist. Okay.
Let me tell you this. We are sending ripples and we are making big waves now. So,
I'm not making ripples. The nurses are making ripples and the nurses frontline is making a change.
We're in this together. Yeah, thank you, nurses.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, right. So yes, we're activists in a way that we want ethical recruitment practice to be observed. Okay. Correct. If you are against what me and Paul and Anna is pushing out here in the Lefora, then the opposite for that is your advocate of unethical practice.
Right.
Because me and Paul and Anna in the DNP are advocates of ethical recruitment practice. Okay. Let's be clear with that. Yes, we're an activist for ethical recruitment.
Yeah.
If we're you not are not out. Agreeing, right?
Yeah.
If someone is disagreeing to that, then you are advocating for the other side, which is called unethical practice.
Correct.
Let's be clear with that. It's just whether you are there or you're there. So, thank you, Paul.
We're not pushing any agendas or selling products or whatever here. We are advocating for nurses. That's it. That's what we do.
Advocate for nurse, under the international recruitment, right? So let's be clear with that once and foremost. But
why we're saying this, because some people are already trying to reach out to us, but we're going to keep doing the podcast. That's what the podcast is all about. We're going to talk about uncomfortable situations. We're going to provide factual information that is also available for everyone to see. We're not here to fight. Defame anyone or to do a naming game, because everything can be Googled at this point. You know what I mean? But we're here to talk about uncomfortable situations that we're sweeping under the rug and we're hiding from nurses who should be knowing about these things. It is about time that we use social media for what it is for, and that is to expose the hidden truths. To protect our future nurses, our next generation of nurses, so we can have more nurses in the future.
Yes, I still believe in ethical healthcare profession. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it's just a matter of you know, this is not being talked about. There's no knowledge on this. So it's not, you know, it's time to bring it out in there. And we're going to talk about it. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Jerry, for joining us. Thank you for advocating for us. We're advocating for all, because at the end of the day, we cannot leave these nurses alone in human trafficking situation, because this is a public safety. Yes. At the end of the day, you and me will be on that table, on that bed. If my nurse is under a human trafficking situation, I'm going to be the one suffering at the end of the day. Maybe not me, maybe not you, but maybe their loved ones. So let's be clear with that. Okay.
Wow.
So thank you, everyone.
It's a long episode, but thank you guys for sticking with us. And thank you to our listeners too. For those who have missed this episode, this is available online in Facebook and YouTube. Also, you can download our podcast in Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, and even YouTube. Thank you guys for joining. We're going to post our shows for August in our Facebook page. So be on the lookout. And if you guys have stories to share or you want to be part of the live stream, please send me an email. We can talk about what topics you guys want to share. We love having guests in our show. My email is info@drnursepaul.com. You can send me an email, or you can also email, reach out to Kay. We would love to host you. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Kay.
All right. Have a great weekend. Great weekend, and happy Olympics watching. Okay. And all take care for the Filipinos in the Carino matter. Bye-bye.
Oh, yep.